Amen. I'm an addict.
Amen.
I just need a second. I'm going to, like, invite my higher power in. You know, I want him to get rid of any ego I have, or, you know, I just want to carry the message, not the mess. So if you can just give me a minute, maybe invite him in too for me. Thanks. I'm Amy. I'm an addict. My clean date is February 6, 2004. And I'm sorry, like, my heart is pounding so hard. Sorry, I probably shouldn't say that. It never gets, you know, easier for me. And it's such an honor, and I want to thank you all for having me here, because it is a really big honor, and it's not where I thought I would ever be, you know, prior to 15 years ago. I'm not sure where I thought I would be, but it wouldn't be here. When I started, you know, using, like, and I'm not going to get into a lot of that, like, we all know how to do that, I would assume. But I was really young. I was 11, and that went on for a long time. I was one of those addicts who, you know, I would know things weren't great, so I would switch my drug of choice, because that makes a lot of sense. And that went on for many years, and, like, you know, I'm a fortunate person, you know, and this actually, my childhood caused me a lot of guilt when I first came around, because I would meet addicts that, you know, had a really hard life. Maybe their parents were addicts or whatever. I was one of two daughters. We were both adopted. You know, I lived in a beautiful home in a beautiful neighborhood. I was cherished and loved, and my parents weren't addicts. And, you know, my sister went to nursing school, and, you know, I just got high. And, like, you know, I always feel the need to say that, because when I first came around, we were talking about H&I. When I first went to rehab, there was a woman who came in, and it was the first, like, exposure I had to, I was an inpatient, to anybody that, I didn't even understand about, like, NA, to be honest. I didn't know where she came from. But what I saw was someone who was, like, my age, and I was in my early 40s, and she was clean. And, like, I couldn't believe it, because everyone with me there, you know, was in the same boat as me. Sick, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, you know, we were all a mess. And that was the first person I can still picture. I even know what she wore. And, like, it was so profound to me that somebody could actually, like, live a life. But I do remember that she had a horrible childhood. Like, you know, just the worst of the worst, and a terrible young teenage marriage, and just awful things. And so the whole time I was just sitting there thinking, you know, she deserved to get high. Like, she deserved that. Who wouldn't? You know, shame on me. Like, it really affected me. I don't know. You know, when you're new, or when I was new, I saw the differences, you know. And even though she was me, she really wasn't. Like, and that guilt took me a long time. That took me a lot of steps to, you know, a lot of step working to get through. But I had this great childhood. Like I said, I just got high. Somehow I managed to get married, and I had two children. I got high the whole time. You know, I really don't even know how I got away with that. I don't know if back then, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I got high the whole time. And at the end of my road, what I thought was the end, I went to rehab, what I just told you about, an inpatient. And I got out, and on the 17th day, I got high. But I continued to go to meetings, and not often. Usually I said I was going, and I never made it. But, you know, I picked up key tags. Like, that sucks, you know? Like, every key tag I've gotten since is, you know, since I got clean, is awesome, because, like, it's real. Because I literally would get up there high and pick up a 30-day, a 60-day. I think by 90 days, I wasn't even faking it anymore. And, you know, then it got real bad at home again. My daughter's here with me. She's, like, my biggest cheerleader. I'm so grateful. When I see stuff like this, people with their kids, or people bringing kids to meetings, and the kids are all disruptive, I'm like, let them go. Like, that's how we got to raise our kids. The most beautiful thing in the world to me is seeing an addict bring their children around. Like, first off, if you don't, you're not coming. If you're not coming, you're getting high. Like, you know, bring the kids, let them yell, I don't care. That's how we, you know, that's how we stay clean, and that's how our kids become, you know, productive members of society. Because, like, I know for real, if I would have kept using, like, at the end, and I know I'm, like, jump around, you know, I was served with the PFA by my husband. I didn't even know what that was because, again, I lived in this beautiful house. I grew up where nobody had a PFA. I'm sure all my neighbors still from that area don't know what that means. You know, I thought I could take my kids and go to my mother. And, you know, the cops are like, no, you got to go. And you cannot talk to your children. You are not allowed any contact. It was like 3 days before Christmas. And, like, you know, I mean, it took me years to even be able to talk about that without, you know, crying. Because, like, I hurt my kids a lot, you know, a lot. But that was, like, the beginning of the end and the beginning for me. And so it's okay, you know, now. So I get served a PFA. I'm devastated. I tell the kids, like, you know, I will see you when I see you. The only other alternative, because then I was accusing him of, you know, not getting high but being abusive or whatever, was they will then take the kids away. And I at least had enough sense to not let that happen, you know, because he was a good father, and it was right for him to have them. And I drove, the cops followed me to the edge of town. We lived in this little town. And when I, you know, they stopped when I left their town. And I went and caught high, you know, because, like, I didn't know any better, and I couldn't stop. And as devastated as I was, like, I just lost my kids. You know, I went to get high because that's what we do. And I see it all the time, and I understand it. You know, it's not cool, but that's what we do. So I went and got high. So that was a couple days before Christmas, and I entered my insurance, or I don't even know what it was. Might have been because I switched to a different drug. I don't know. Would not allow me to go to inpatient that time, so I had to go to outpatient. And I started that, like, 3 days into the new year, and my clean date's February, you know, like, and if you listen to me then, all I'd be saying is, my kids, I want my kids, and I did, but, you know, that drug was just too powerful, like, I couldn't stop, and I was fortunate enough, I got into an outpatient program. When they told me I was going there, you know, because I knew everything, I was like, you know, so my therapist is in recovery, because she got to be, you know, and they're like, no, she's not. And I was like, oh, that's not going to work for me. And they're like, well, you know, that's where you're going. And it turned out that woman saved my life. Like, my daughter and I will go see her every once in a while. We'll take her flowers. Like, she saved my life. Because here's the deal. In that 6 weeks or 5 weeks, whatever it is, you know, I would use. And I would refuse drug tests. And I should have been kicked out. And she would let me stay. And you know, she just, it got to the point where it was obvious to her I had, like, maybe strung together, like, 2 days clean. And she's like, well, now you got to write down your clean date. And I'm like, not ready. Because, you know, I still had that reservation. And I really still did not believe, you know, I was going to meetings, again, high for a while, that, you know, because the promise tells us, you know, it tells us any addict can stop using. And I had done that, like, for 17 days. Was the most before that. Lose the desire, did not believe that at all, and find a new way to live. Like, I didn't believe that either. And, like, how crazy is it? We're all here. Like, we find a new way to live. But at the time, I was like, I'm not writing down my clean date. And then it would be, like, a day or two later. And I was like, oh, my God. I remember when I had 4 days clean, I wrote down my clean date. You know, by the grace of God, like, I've kept that clean date. And by the grace of this woman. And, you know, I remember asking her, like, how did you... Oh, and when my insurance made me go down to half-time or whatever, I didn't know that. Like, she kept me there all day, every day. Because she knew, like, I was my worst enemy. And when it came time for her to tell me, you have to go to half-day now, I was like, I can't. This is, like, months into it. She's like, Amy, I'm going to be honest. Like, your insurance company is actually stopping right now. Like, you have been on half day for, like, 2 months. I can let you come half day, but, like, I can't keep you here all day. I was like, this woman's amazing. And she kept me there. I was there for a long time, you know, every day outpatient. And I always tell the story, like, and I hated my ex. He's my ex-husband now, but I was married then. Hated him. He would give me $10 every day. And it was, this is 15 years ago. $5 was for a pack of cigarettes, and $5 was for gas. I mean, now I don't even know, you know, that would be $20 or $30 a day, but that's all I got. Like, I couldn't touch anything. I had driven us into such severe debt. You know, I had stolen from those parents that loved me so much, that literally took this baby that had nowhere to go and took care of me, raised me, sent me to school, did this, got me everything I ever wanted or needed anyway. They weren't like total indulgent people. They were depression people, so I didn't get everything I wanted, but they gave me everything I needed and mostly what I wanted. You know, I stole repeatedly. I would write checks of my father's and just cash them. Like, I sucked. A story came up because, you know, like, for a couple or however long since Keith asked me to speak, you know, my past starts kicking in. And by the way, I gave great leads all this week. I mean, I don't know what today's going to bring, but they were great. And, like, my past starts coming back, and I remembered this when I was an outpatient. I came home one day, and I probably had, I don't know, like 2 weeks clean or something, very minimal. And there was a note on my door, a card, and it was the constable had came. And I had to, like, go to, it was just, like, the local court or whatever. And, you know, he had came to serve me these papers, and I had to call. And I was like, you know, oh, my God, I'm so clean. How can this happen? You know, I had, like, 2 weeks. And it was bad checks I'd written, which were my own. I wrote bad checks. And so I have to go do it, you know. And, like, nobody went with me. Like, my ex-husband was like, sorry, I'm not taking off work. You got to go. And I'm not giving you any money to get out of it either. So I go to the local magistrate, you know, everybody, all the kids that are, you know, a little bit older than my kids at the time. My son was, I think, 13. You know, they got speeding tickets, whatever the hell it was. Oh, I skipped something. So I get that note, and I'm like, I'm not calling. No way. They can come get me, whatever. I'm clean. I'm not going to get in any trouble. And I hear another noise. The dog we had was barking, and I thought, son of a bitch, this guy's back? I mean, it's bad checks. How bad is this, right? So I go downstairs my stairs, and I look. I have windows all over my house, and there's a kid trying to use a crowbar to open my window. Like, there's somebody. I don't realize at the time it's a kid. Now, he's, like, from me to this guy right there away at this window, and I'm thinking, why doesn't he see me? Like, I'm right there. I think he knows I'm there. He's going to break in and kill me, you know? So I freak out. This was phones when you had landlines, too. So I have a phone on the wall. I, like, grab it. I go up the steps. I call 911. I'm like, there's somebody trying to break into my house. Okay, stay on the phone. Don't approach the guy. Is he still there? I'm like, hold on. I look. He's in another window. I go, he's still here. Now, at this point, I see it in his eyes. I know what he's doing. He's me, you know, 2 weeks ago. He needs to get high. But he's trying to break into my house, and I'm home. But I see it, and he looks like a baby, right? I'm like, oh, my God. I go, he's right here. He's at this window in front of me. And all I hear is the lady go, do not approach the window. Like, screw. I knock on the window. I go, hey. And this poor kid, he's like, ah. And he takes off. So I'm like, my life is just so messed up. Like, so the cops come, and they go, I give him a description. This little kid, he's got like a fake little mustache. He must be 15. He was 18. Unfortunately, he had just turned 18 for him anyway. So they go, we know who he is. He lives, there's woods behind my house. He lives on the other side. We know. Don't they bring him around for me to ID too? This kid's crying in the back of a cop car. I'm like, shit, I'm hardly clean myself. And he's just crying, I'm sorry, he's mouthing, I'm sorry. The cop picks up, now this is a cop who had not been to my house, and I also didn't tell you, like, the cops had been to my house many times, many, many times before they served me with the PFA. Like, you know, my husband called him, and rightly so. Now, if you'd asked me then, I'd have told you what a jag-off he was, but he should have. He did the right thing, I didn't. But the cop picks up a needle and shows it to me. I'm like, come on. So cut to when I have to go to the little magistrate for my bad checks, and who's there? It's his court date, too. Now, oh, I get a thing that says I got to go there because it's his court date. So I go to, like, 8 a.m., and he's got, like, a 1 o'clock. Now I know it's a whole day, and I just started a job, too. Like, I'm trying to be a productive member of society, and I'm on my high horse because I got, you know, a month clean, and which was a struggle, and that's a miracle. Sorry, it is a big deal, but only here. You know, out there, they don't care. So I go, the lady goes, he's first. His lawyer comes over to me and goes, well, I want to throw the book at him. Like, he's 18, he's got to go to jail. He's been in and out of, you know, placement forever. I go, no, like, he's an addict. I'm an addict. He's an addict. Send him to rehab. I'll say send him to rehab. His lawyer's arguing the point with me. And I'm like, sorry, right now with like a month clean, I'm not sending anyone to jail, especially that little kid with the fake mustache. Five hairs. I go, no, not doing it. I'm saying to the lady up there, the judge, whatever she is, the magistrate, I go, I'm saying, no, I want him to go to rehab. I'm being all, you know, NA. I gave him a key tag, a white key tag when I left. He left. I didn't get to leave right away. So they go okay to him. He gets to pay like $300. He can make payments. He gets to go home on his own, but he's going to get back to court, you know, when we go to the real court downtown. That's fine. Okay. Now it's my turn. I write bad checks. Now, I'm not saying that isn't bad, but this kid's trying to break into my house with a crowbar. And it gets my turn. This lady was like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, both, you know, so I feel like a total idiot because I'm like a mom, you know. I think I had a Dare bumper sticker from my daughter on the back of my Pontiac 6000. And I go, yeah, that's me. Well, threw the book at me for bad checks. Here's the deal. I had to give them right then and there. It was like $800. I was like, I have nothing. They're like, okay. And the constable's standing there and they go, well, you're going to go to jail. So you get it. And I'm like, wait, I'm going to jail, but this kid I just got, he gets to go home, not even on a bus to rehab. You're going to jail. You have 2 hours before close, 4 o'clock, to come up with it. I go, am I allowed to leave? Because nobody's going to bring me money, right? You can leave, but you have to come back or there will be a warrant. So I call my 80-year-old dad. Like, come on, 80 years old. I go, Dad, I need $800 or they're taking me to jail at 4 o'clock. He's like, okay, honey girl, just come over to the house and get a check. I go, Dad, I can't get a check. Nobody's going to cash a check for me right now. Nobody. I go, I got to have you. I'll pick you up. But we got, now at this point, it's like an hour and 20 minutes and I'm 20 minutes from his house. Like, I got to get that cash. Like, you know, and I forgot all about that till today. And it really wasn't fair. But anyway, the story with that kid, you know, the story of me is I stayed clean. Like, thank God, right? Another, probably, you know, painful nail in my father's coffin. But, he pulled through and I didn't go to jail that day for check writing. And this kid, I then have to go into town for the kid. He never shows up. I still don't know how any of this works, and I still don't know how I've never been arrested prior to this. You know, because, like, I have this thought that I look like maybe I was smoking weed and, you know, doing a little Valium because of how I am now and how old I am, but, like, that wasn't my story, you know what I mean? And the fact that I wasn't arrested is shocking. So, anyway, the kid doesn't show up. And they go, you're going to have to come back again when we get a bench warrant because then we'll have him. I'm like, I'm not coming back again. This is ridiculous. I keep missing work. Well, you got to come back when he does. So he's on the run for like a year. At this point now I got some time. I go back. They put him in rehab. He struggles for a couple years. Like about 5 years ago, I hear the kid's clean. Like that's amazing. Like I love that because that kid struggled and I did not expect to hear that. Kid's clean. He gets married. He has a couple kids. And that kid wrecked his car clean and died. The father of like a couple kids. But when I heard that, like, you know what I thought? He was clean. Like, he was clean. He wasn't high. You know, I knew by then everybody in West there, including the cops. He wasn't high. He had changed his whole life around. This after that kid watched his stepfather, the only father he ever knew, overdosed right in front of him. Like, another one of those ones that I kind of felt like, you know, didn't stand a chance and might have been my kids if I kept going. But he died clean. And, like, all the time I've been here in Narcotics Anonymous, I have watched people, we all have, we lose people, you know. You lose people. Sometimes they're people you really care about. Sometimes it's shocking. But when I lose someone who dies clean, Like, I'm like, that's how I want to go. Like, I hope it's not tomorrow, but, like, as long as I go to bed tonight, and because y'all let me come out here and talk today, I have a chance of going home and not getting high today. Because 15 years doesn't mean anything. Like, I'm far away from my last one, but, like, my next one's right there at any point. And that's why I say, you know, that's why I say, yeah, I'll drive an hour and a half to give a lead. Like, if someone's willing to listen, God told me I needed to go. And, of course, it's always so I get something out of it. Like, I'm sure God figures I need it. But, you know, my goal is to be clean when I die. How I'm going to achieve that or hope to achieve it, I keep coming back. You know, I go to meetings all the time. I sponsor women. I tried this. You know, I went through the period of time where I didn't work steps. You know, I did a couple. People always talk about life on life's terms here. It's like that. I mean, I get what they're talking about, but, like, I'm alive, so life is going to happen. Like, it's not always good. Stuff is going to happen. I had 18 months clean when my mother got sick. And I had to take care of my parents, and then my mother ended up, and my mother was had severe pain, so I was in charge of pain meds. And, opiates, heroin, whatever, wasn't my last drug. It was my first rehab drug, but didn't matter. Like, that was hard, you know. But I knew, like, as long as I stayed in the middle, like, I had made relationships in here, and I had a sponsor, and at that point I had been working on steps. And, you know, when I couldn't get to a meeting, those people called me and made sure I was okay. When I sat at the hospital with my mother for almost 6 weeks, dying, taking turns with my sister, taking care of my dad who had Parkinson's, like, those people in NA took care of me. They carried me. And the reason they did was because I was there, you know. I know some people are like, they left me, you know. And I'm like, dude, you left first. Like, just come around. Like, just call someone. Like, I will come pick you up. I will make you dinner. I will help you through whatever you are going through. But you got to be here so I see you, so we see you, so we can help you, you know. And, like, luckily, that's where I was at that point. So my mother died and, wrecked me. And I actually had a commitment to give a lead. And I had it for, like, a month. And, my mother died like a week and a half before that lead. And that was the hardest thing I ever did, you know. Because, like, I'm up here and it's just coming out of me how I stole off of them. I used to take her pills, like, all the time. Like, she needed those. Like, she wasn't an addict. She would save them because, of course, I had a terrible neck, you know. Somehow, tests, MRIs all showed I had this horrible disc problem that just went away when I got clean, like, miraculously. It doesn't even hurt anymore. But, like, she would make sure I had enough pills because, you know, I was always running out of them. And, like, and then I would steal them. And, like, I had to stand there and, like, admit to people because, you know what? First off, God, my higher power, talks through me. And, like, I don't know, maybe somebody else was doing that same thing or felt, like, you know, a certain kind of way about that. So when I start taking care of them, my mother dies, and then my father dies 3 months later. And then my only sister died 2 years after that. That was a shit show, let me tell you. Even now, like, I think, how in God's name, you know? And I'm raising kids at the same time, trying to stay clean, you know? I lost everybody, you know? And I didn't get high. So, you know, when people come to me, first off, nobody comes to me and goes, you know, I want to get high because, like, my neighbor's dog died. Don't come to me with that. Like, they know, because I will tell you, you can get through anything. I will hold your hand grieving for that, you know. I will do anything I can to help you through it, but I will not co-sign that or say it's okay. And if you come to me after the fact, I won't even listen. Now, that's an excuse. What are we going to do today? Like, maybe I have a reputation as a bitch. But everyone in my area knows, don't come to Amy if you just want, you know, padded. Like, I'm going to hold you. I'll do anything I can for you. But I'm not co-signing anything. You know, I've watched a good friend of mine. Her son, you know, was in and out, just, like, never could get some time. And he and I became super close. Like, he would call me mom, too. Not that he didn't adore his mother. He did. But it was, like, that kind of relationship, you know. He overdosed. Well, she didn't use, so how am I going to justify using? Like, I've realized There is no reason for me to use. Doesn't mean I can't, you know, and it doesn't mean once in a blue moon. Like, I've lost that desire for sure from being here, but, like, I have to be vigilant, you know. The people I see get through life on life's terms without getting high are the ones that are here, that are coming to picnics, that are going to meetings, that are being sponsored, working on steps. You know, there's freedom in those steps and there's growth. And I became at a huge standstill after all of the deaths in my family, my whole family, you know, except my immediate family, my kids and my husband, after they died. You know, I went into a deep depression, no excuse, and I kind of like barely had a toe in recovery. Thank God I had that toe in. You know, I would hit my home group when I could, didn't work on a step. It took me years to do my fourth step. Years of pain and holding on by the skin of my teeth, white knuckling it sometimes, even with, you know, 4 years clean and 5 years clean. Because I didn't, you know, I would say to people, I don't need to do steps. I'm clean. Like, you know, if I use, you can tell me I need to be doing these steps. I'm clean. You know, still had not learned anything because I had not worked steps, you know. I finally, I don't even know how long I cleaned when I picked up steps. I was like, oh, my God, this is what everyone's talking about. How about that? Like, they were all right, you know. I had done everything else, because when I finally decided that I needed and wanted and desired to be clean, I realized I had to do the exact opposite of everything I'd done. But then somewhere in there, I forgot, or I like cherry picked. Well, I'm here and I'm clean, and you know, you step crazies, and you know, it's not punishment. I tell my girls, this is how you move forward, you know. And they'll be like, my friend, she's in the middle. She's not using, but like, oh, my God, she's with a guy who uses, and she's doing this and that. And I'm like, okay, she doesn't go to meetings. Like, and I'm not trying to call anyone out. I'm trying to teach people, like, if we look around, you know, like that whole Mr. Rogers thing, look for the helpers that we keep hearing. Well, look for the helpers here. There's tons of them, you know. I had a list of phone numbers for years, you know, and I called like two people. I didn't understand the value in that, like, that it, you know, because I didn't think I had anything to give anyone. So why would I call you? Well, number one, you might help me, and number two, I am going to help you, you know. What's kept me clean for all this time is, you know, being here, working steps, learning about myself. You know, I restored my spirit. And, you know, it doesn't mean I'm perfect, and it doesn't mean, you know, people be like, oh, there's so many judging people in NA. You know, we've heard it all. And I'm like, yeah, well, like, I'm not judging your program. I'm not gonna. Like, I might tell you if you're like, my life's the shit. Well, here's some suggestions. This is what worked for me and what I've seen work for the thousands of people that I have, you know, been around, because everyone's a teacher. Some teach us what to do, what not to do. Well, it's real serious. Like, I mean, it's easy as heck. Like, if you see someone living a decent life and that's what you want, well, let's start doing what they want. You see someone out there not struggling, whatever, doing grimy stuff, you don't want to be like that. Well, let's not do that. That's all NA is, you know. When I finally, you know, got the value of that is when my life changed, you know. And I loved when people would ask me to sponsor them, because they knew, they saw me, you know, or someone said, oh, she's got 4 years or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I can't sponsor you. I'm sorry. I haven't worked the fourth step. And that was like and I didn't want to sponsor anyone, quite frankly. I wanted to be sponsored. Sorry. I did not want to sponsor anyone. And I didn't get the value of it. To me, it looked like work, and I didn't want to deal with it. I wanted someone taking care of me. I didn't want to take care of you. I didn't get how it's actually a circle, and my sponsees actually, I think, keep me clean much more than I keep them clean. You know, I help them along. I help them through the steps. You know, if there's some things they want to talk to me about in recovery, I'm there for them, but really, they're keeping me clean. But of course, you know, I didn't do. So for a long time, for like a couple years, nope, sorry, didn't do the fourth step, not allowed to sponsor you. And finally, somebody goes, well, why the hell don't you do that fourth step? And I was like, oh, I guess I could, right? And I looked around and like, there aren't a lot of women with time where I'm at. Like, we have a lot of people and a lot of them in North Pittsburgh. And like, you know, I go a little bit, even though not much, right? Outside of North Pittsburgh, we're like notorious for not crossing a bridge over there. I go a little bit once in a while. But I looked around, there weren't women, you know, and I'm just talking women. There's really a lot. Not a ton of men either. Like, you'll see it'll be the same people because, you know, we become complacent or like me. No thanks. It's all about me. I still need a lot of help, you know. I didn't realize, so I worked the step when somebody said that to me. I just thought, wow, that was pretty profound. Probably been told to me 100 times before. But I worked that step and like my life started changing. Like, I became just better with myself, you know. I understood myself better, you know. That fourth step was amazing. And then, you know, I didn't get past that and I switched sponsors. So then I rewrote another fourth step. Now that fourth step was gold, man. I could have published that book. I wrote and wrote and wrote and I was like, I am the goddess of NA. I'm great. I figured out the key. I write every single thing I can think of. Way better step than the first time I did it. I'm so proud of myself. I go to my sponsor. She has 35 years, I think, clean. We get together. She's like, we'll sit. So I've paid literally a book. And it was so cool because it was like this journal my sister had bought me because she was also my great cheerleader and it had the Serenity Prayer on it. And like that, I think, you know, I was so magical because it was in the book my sister got me and I wrote forever, pages on pages on pages. So I open it up because I'm going to read it to her, right? This woman has sponsored like 500 people. She's like, oh, no. Did you write that? I go, yeah. She goes, okay, you wrote that. Now we're just going to talk. I was like, what? I was so mad. I wanted to read her my dissertation. I probably could have a PhD after it. I mean, she's never listened or read it, you know, and guess what? She didn't have to. We sat there for hours discussing because I knew what I wrote and I tried that too and I'm just not strong enough. I'll be like, no, we don't got to read that. Talk to me. And they're like, well, and then they get going and I'm like, okay, now we're on like your fourth grade boyfriend and hey, okay, it's okay. I don't have the nerve to stop you because I know the disappointment. But that was like the greatest moment, and it wasn't like angels came down or some people were like, oh, but like it changed everything for me, you know. And then after we get done talking and she goes, okay, so what was actually the worst thing, you know, and we talked about like my good stuff. It wasn't like all my bad because that's what I thought it was going to be, but we talked about, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, my assets, my terrible, my this, my that. And then when it's all over, she looks me in the eye and goes, well, what was the actual worst thing you ever did? And I just blurt out. I hadn't written it in that 500-page thing. I'd never put it down because, like, I could not even be that honest. But when I'm with another person who loves me and is only there listening to this craziness and has heard it all a million times, right, because she wants to help me stay alive and live the best life I can while I'm doing it, I just blurt it out. And actually, we still laugh about it. The look on her face was utter shock and kind of shocked me because she had so many years clean and I knew she had sponsored so many people. And then I was kind of like, oh, I shocked her, you know. Woo, all those women, I did something worse. What is wrong with you, right? Like, God. And then she goes, okay, is that the actual worst thing you ever did? And I'm like, no, actually, here's one more. And then she's like, is that it? I go, no, we're done. You know, she knows stuff that no other human being does know or will ever know. And you know what? It's okay. That shock look kind of went away. She goes, I wasn't shocked. Yeah, you were. You were. And I'm a little proud. Because, like, it's kind of like that thing, too. You know, when you first, they find out you're an addict and, you know, you're going to get clean and you're like, I don't do that much. I really don't. Then you get to rehab and you're like, yeah, I smoke crackle. You know, like, it's blown out. Like, I mean, it's what it is. But you're, like, almost telling people, yeah. Yeah, I dope. But I got off that last year. Now it's strictly crack because that was smart. That stuff saved my life, actually, because there's no hiding that when you don't come home. days and stuff and that money. But anyway, like, you know, you go through these phases where, no, I'm not that bad. Then this is what I did. Then now you get some clean time. You're like, you know, I'll tell people, like, I don't generally, I have my own business. I do nails, and it's just me. And it's weird because, like, I don't get my name of my business is called Nail Addict. And which also I didn't realize until my daughter pointed out was N.A. It's the actual abbreviation, but I liked Addict was in there. And I have a cool logo she made me. It's like Nail looks really pretty, and then Addict looks like prison text, you know. So it's kind of like me all the way around. But I don't go around telling all my clients, but for some reason, like, every once in a while I spew it. I'll tell them what I am, who I am, really. And, like, every time, like, God, my higher power has never failed me, because every time, like, that person knows someone and needs some help. And that's even without being in my business. Anytime I've ever told someone when it really wasn't necessary to tell them, it's been a reason. You know, they needed help. So, somebody they knew needed help. How can you help me? What can I do? You know, every time it's been good. Every single time. I don't remember where I was going with that. Sorry. God. I lost my train there. It's gone. My daughter, who's here with me, is she's actually, well, she just started a new job, but she's been a therapist in recovery. And I was thinking this week also about when I had about a month clean. And this is the power. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm a lane changer. I'm going back to my fourth step. So after we're all done and she tells me she's not shocked, whatever. She hands me, what are those white cards called, you know, in school? You know, index cards. Jesus Christ. She hands me a stack of index cards and she's like, you know, attention seeker, write this down. She's listening stuff, you know, fearful. After about like the sixth thing, I'm like, are these my character defects? And she goes, are they? You know? And they were, and she helped me with that, like, because we had just spent 3 hours talking about who I really was. Like, it wasn't about what I wrote, because I knew what I wrote. It was about, like, who I really was. So that was, you know, pretty crazy. But I went back to, because, you know, I'm a firm believer, like, you know, there's this saying in here, meeting makers make it. And, like, that's the truth, but you got to add to that. Like, I have, I had a good friend who went to a meeting every day for 2 years. 2 years. When he first came, he had just gotten out of jail. He did not have a license. He rode a bicycle, an old 10-speed he bought for, like, $2 or something. And he would ride on Route 8. I don't know if you guys know that. But anyway, it's a road, you know, like cars go fast on, 50 miles an hour. And he would ride to and from a meeting because he wanted to get clean that bad, right? Every day, at least one meeting a day, sometimes two, three. But he never got a sponsor and he never worked a step. You know, all of a sudden you don't see him for a couple days and he comes back and he's like, I got high. Like, okay, like, maybe you better add something to that meeting. Because meeting makers make it, but you got to add a little bit to something. You know, this is a 12-step program, and if you're hanging out here and you're not doing steps, and I don't mean with 5 days clean, because you don't got to write your steps with 5 days. You got to get a sponsor, and she'll tell you, whoever, will tell you when to. But, like, if you're hanging out here and you're not doing step work, it's a weird place to hang out. Right? It's weird. You'll get a lot of fellowship. It's wonderful. You know, like, you guys are here at this picnic. So cool. But, like, you got to do some stuff. Or you should. It keeps you clean. Anyway, another thing that I feel, like, when I observe who I've lost, who we've lost, it's always the person who either never gets in the middle or is gotten in a little bit, but then dips out, right? They might still go to meetings. They might even call their sponsor, but they're not, like, in the middle. There's no fellowshipping. There's no, you know, sitting a little bit before the meeting, calling another person. Like, they're not in the middle. And, like, I've recognized that, and that's why I choose to stay in the middle, you know, and why I choose to gather people and make sure they're in the middle, because that is the common denominator with everyone. Like, that guy went to a meeting every day, he used. That one, you know, I mean, bottom line, we pick up, that's how we die, and that's how we go back out. But, like, my observation is stay in the middle, get your sponsor, work on something. That's how, you know, we stay here. And I was thinking, I had about a month clean or something. I don't know, it was the beginning of spring, and I couldn't get my shit together to do anything but go to outpatient, buy my pack of cigarettes, and get to a meeting every night. And, sorry, I don't know why I have this tickle in my throat. The group of people that, like, I didn't even know that well at that time, but that were always at my home group and always at the meetings I went to, were like, hey, you got kids, right? And I'm like, yeah, my daughter was just turning 11 and my son was ready to turn 14. Yeah, I got two kids. They're like, okay, let's go to the zoo on Saturday. And I'm like, oh, I don't know that I can go to the zoo. Like, I couldn't even get it together enough to have made a day for my kids at that point. You know, like, I was so sick and so messed up. They're like, we're going to the zoo with your kids. Not one of those people had children, by the way. And they went to the zoo with my kids. And I imagine you still remember that, Mimi, yep. Like, it was a beautiful thing. Like, I got to be normal for a day. I got to be a mom for a day. And they got to, like, just gather up my kids and be normal. Like, my kids got to see their first experience with recovering addicts that were actually recovering. It wasn't their mom going to rehab, coming back out, lying, not coming home, smoking crack, you know, doing this, leaving, not coming home. Their dad and their mother fighting all the time. They saw normal human beings that, like, spent the day with them. Thank you. And, like, how much more beautiful of a program can that be? Because, like, you know, none of my friends talk about someone scooping them up with their kids and taking them somewhere. My kids got to, you know, see that there was hope in that. Like, that their mother could actually attain a life like that, and that they could do things like go to the zoo, go to the park, whatever, you know. My daughter and I, she just gave me, like, a five-minute warning, and I'm thinking it might be, like, three at this point. I don't know. Thank you. You know, if you're not in the middle, get in the middle. You know, all we got to do is follow what the helpers do and what the people write their names on that. Like, I don't know, that's what we do. We write our numbers on things. Nobody ever calls. I've probably given my number to 8,000 people. I have never gotten a phone call, not once. Yeah. Like, but guess what? I had stacks of them too and I didn't call. Because I was like, oh, I'll call you when I want to get high. No, I won't. If I'm not calling you already, I'm not calling you when I want to get high. Like, that's just not how I roll. And most people, same thing. There was a guy who came around briefly and he ended up using and dying. And but, like, for his magical moment in NA, he was awesome. He was like the Pied Piper. He got all the young people, like, together, and they would do stuff. And what I saw him do was he would get the newcomer's number. And I'm like, oh, I was taught, no, you give them your number. And he's like, Amy, did you ever call anyone? And I'm like, nope. He goes, yeah, I call them. I text them first. Then they call me. And I was like, holy heck, it took some dumb kid to tell me that one. And you know what? Everyone but him is still clean. It's almost like he was sent on here, and that was like 6-7 years ago, to get these people okay, and then he left. Like, I don't understand it, but that's what we do. You know, just keep coming back. You know, all you got to do is go to bed tonight and not get high, and, like, it's a miracle. Like, I come here, I see these miracles. I see people's kids. I'm like, my whole heart is so full with the miracles that can happen. And when my daughter chose, she works in recovery, and I thought, because I was telling Keith this, I thought all along, oh, my God, my poor kid, because I would never tell her to do that, and that was not her original plan. And I thought she was trying to re-save me over and over. Because, you know, everything's about me still. Even though I work on that, I try real hard. I thought she was trying to save me, and it bummed me out because it's a hard job being a therapist. And adolescent recovery is what she just spent the last 4 years. I'm like, oh, God, no. And one day she said something, and I just looked at her, and I'm like, you're not trying to save me, are you? And she goes, no, you're okay for the moment. I go, why do you do it? She goes, because I know you're all worth it. I'm an addict named Amy. Thank you for listening.